Good afternoon. It is 12:02 Friday afternoon with a little bit of sun, which the forecast called for more clouds than sun, which we still have quite a few clouds, but still, overall, not a bad day. I'm Eric Scott, and of course, with us is both Wolfboro residents, State Senator Jeb Bradley, and Congressperson. No. Representative.
Yes.
Representative.
State Representative.
Sorry, I had a senior moment there.
Yeah, you know, I'd be honored, but I think that's way too, you putting the cart ahead of the horse on that one, Eric. That's a very long time if I ever even think about it. I don't think about it at all.
It's Brody Deshaies, for those who don't know the voice. Thank you for being with us, Senator. Appreciate it.
Yeah, how are you?
I am very well, sir. Before we go any further, I just wanted to congratulate Brody on his engagement.
Oh, thank you, Eric.
You had mentioned,
appreciate it.
And,
yeah.
Happy for you.
Oh, well, you know, Grace is a very special person in my life. We've been together for when I proposed to her on Friday, June 10th, it had been 7 years that we've been together. So it was about time that, you know, I get the gumption and the courage to make that next step in my life. But yeah, it was great. And a lot of exciting things going on in my life these days. So
have you set a date?
A year, 2025, probably.
Okay.
So, a while. With all this inflation, I'll be patient.
I understand. Let me just, first thing is address the, for those of you who were listening to the news, there was yet another school shooting. And with that, I got an email today that Governor Sununu signed a bill for another $10 million in school security. So, I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Senator, are we doing enough to keep our schools secure, or is that more a duty of the individual school districts?
Excuse me. I think we have dedicated, I think it's $28 million in a past budget for schools to make the upgrades that they need for security. I believe that the fiscal committee approved another $10 million this morning for additional school security. In light of the, you know, situation that we're seeing with shootings and things like that, the top priorities, I think, have to be making sure that every school, you know, has lockdown provisions, has, you know, only one entrance that the public can come in, has, you know, a way of making sure that, you know, people are screened with resource officers, things like that. So our ability to help schools with some of the surplus funds we have is good. That's number one. And then number two, you know, our mental health system to identify people that, you know, are making these kind of threats so that action can be taken to, you know, get them the kind of treatment that they need before, you know, a tragedy happens. So we've made major, major upgrades over the last 5 or 6 years in our mental health system, and we're continuing to do that. And, you know, because of the drug crisis and, you know, all the fentanyl pouring across the southern border and things like that, the mental health crisis and the pandemic, too, has gotten worse, if anything. So we need to keep up, you know, on mental health. But I think we're doing both of those, and, you know, that's pretty important.
Do you support the New Hampshire raising its age to 21 for rifles and other firearms?
I mean, look, I don't want to infringe upon law-abiding citizens' rights under the Second Amendment. I think that, you know, there's obviously a discussion in Congress now as to what may or may not happen. I like the fact that Congress is also focusing on, you know, mental health and school safety. I think that, you know, that's something that we can all, you know, get behind. One thing that I think would be worth pursuing in New Hampshire is to make sure that records for people that are juveniles, you know, under 18, go into the background check system, you know, when they seek to purchase, you know, a gun. I think that would be, you know, a reform that would probably make a lot of sense in New Hampshire.
You mean to tell me that juvenile records aren't available on a background
juvenile
check?
Juvenile records are sealed.
I did not know that. Oh, I was today years old when I learned that. Wow. Okay, so, yeah, so somebody turns 18, they could buy a gun. That's actually quite an interesting thought. Interesting.
So I think it's something, I mean, obviously it would have to be a piece of legislation, would have to go through the, you know, the hearing process and all of that. But I think, you know, that is one way consistent with, you know, our existing laws that, you know, we can avert a mental health crisis and ensure that somebody like that, which, you know, for anybody that was older, and that would create, you know, a background problem in purchasing, you know, a weapon, you know, doing that for minors, I think is appropriate too.
So if somebody has or is in a mental crisis, do they automatically lose their right to carry a gun?
It depends on what it is. If you've been adjudicated that, you know, on an involuntary admission or something like that, then yes. If you are going to counseling, you know, and something like that, then no. So it, you know, I mean, people have rights in this country too, and we have to, you know, protect people from rights and their rights, and due process is a very important issue, Eric, for all of us as Americans. That being said, that's what the law allows. So if somebody's been adjudicated, you know, with a mental health situation or issue, then no, that should show up in the NICS check, and that, you know, would preclude them from being able to purchase a weapon. The something that, excuse me, hasn't gotten a lot of publicity is a bill that passed Congress, I think it was in 2019, that President Trump must have signed, that upgrades how, you know, the reporting to the NICS system goes. There were a lot of holes in the reporting, and so people that should have been reported weren't getting reported, were able to buy guns that shouldn't have been able to buy guns. I think that the way we do our background checks in this country, you know, we want to make sure that people's rights are protected. I totally am there on that. But at the same time, you know, it's for law-abiding citizens or for people that are not adjudicated, you know, with a mental health issue, or drug users that have been adjudicated, or, you know, domestic abuse situations that is, you know, problematic. So the reporting is crucial to making sure that law-abiding citizens' rights are protected, but, you know, those who are not, it's a different situation.
Now, those people who end up losing their right because they're, I believe the word you used was adjudicated with some kind of mental illness, they get, or if they get better, can they, is there a way to petition for your rights back?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Do you know how that goes?
And there should be. I mean, it's like any illness.
Right.
You know, and it should be that way.
Okay. 12:11 here on WASR. We're talking with State Senator Jeb Bradley and Representative Brody DeShays, both of Wolfboro. Yesterday, the bombshell dropped in the state about a huge electric price increase coming down the pike. Sometimes as much as 40-45% in some cases, which would put the average bill, what did they say, about $150-something a month. Is there anything that the state can do to encourage more production of energy and try to get the price down?
Well, let me take that one, and then I think Brody should hop in. You know, look, we got two problems. And the first problem is that the Biden administration has just, you know, kicked the living stuffings out of you know, all the energy companies in this country that produce, whether it's natural gas or oil or, you know, any kind of fossil fuel-based source of energy, denying the Keystone Pipeline, curtailing federal leasing, no more production in the Arctic. So it's led to $5 a gallon gasoline, which is probably going up to $6 by the end of the summer. And that's a huge problem. And the fact that natural gas is such a large component of how we generate electricity in New Hampshire, it's a huge problem for New Hampshire and New England. But we've also done this to ourselves by allowing radical environmental groups like the Sierra Club to block any new infrastructure like gas pipelines that would, you know, alleviate the supply crunch. So we're at the end of the pipeline. We don't produce our own natural gas, so we need more capacity to get in here. We don't have it. So the price is going to be even higher in New England and New Hampshire than it has to be. But that's a direct result of, you know, these environmental groups that have said no to everything. You know, and I was just talking with the governor this morning. There was one of the bills he vetoed, the transportation initiative. It would have led to about a 20-cent increase in the price of every gallon of gasoline had we done that a couple of years ago. So these are the things that these environmental groups are pushing in New Hampshire and in Washington. And we've seen the results of the, you know, the so-called Green New Deal that they've tried to implement by, you know, kicking the daylights out of oil and gas companies. And guess what? Prices are soaring. And they have no answer, because the only answer is produce more. And they won't do that.
Well, if you remember, was it last year, that one day for the oil market that prices actually went negative, which I thought was interesting. It was unprecedented. And a lot of oil companies are saying, well, if we start producing a lot now, prices will crash and then we'll go bankrupt again. I'm not sure
they
I buy that argument.
More. I mean, Exxon, Eric, has announced, you know, how many hundreds of millions of dollars they're spending to upgrade their capacity. But you don't just turn the switch on,
right,
and produce more energy overnight. There's long lead times. There's permitting. There's review. There's construction. There's capital acquisition that you have to have for it. So this doesn't happen overnight. And when you do things like cancel the Keystone Pipeline, we'd have a million barrels of oil a day flowing into this country to be used had Biden not canceled that a year and a half ago. And it'd be pretty much coming online about now. And so, you know, and it'd be the same in New England if we were enhancing our natural gas capacity. And look, I don't think there are many people in New Hampshire that have worked harder than I have for renewable energy. We need more of it. I mean, I have sponsored numerous bills to enhance our biomass situation, and the governor's going to sign one of them in the next couple of weeks, and that'll keep the Berlin biomass plant chugging along. And that's a good thing. I've sponsored net metering bills. I've sponsored, you know, upgrades to our renewable portfolio standard. But these are not the things that will take care of the crisis that we have today. They're partly today because we're getting more and more renewables, but we don't just flip the switch and say no to fossil fuels and yes to renewables and think that we're not going to have a crisis. We have a crisis. And it's because, you know, you need long lead times and planning and the appropriate, you know, regulatory and, you know, capital type of infrastructure to be built. It doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, the Biden people just thought, oh, yeah, well, all we have to do is say we support the Green New Deal and it'll all be, you know, wine and roses. Well, we see the wine and roses every time, you know, we pass the gas pump, and it's pretty sour wine in the taste of New Hampshire residents, who rightfully so should be very upset.
Brody, you want to jump in on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the biggest thing is that this was created by the federal government, this energy crisis, and it's going to take them to lead us out of it. But the current incompetency down in Washington, D.C. is never going to get the job done. But there's things that New Hampshire Republicans, Governor Sununu, Senator Bradley, and myself have done to address this problem. I mean, first, obviously, you know, you raised the question because of the 50% rate increase that's being proposed in front of the PUC, that the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, who regulates the price of energy, you know, that their hands are pretty tied, right? Because these energy companies, the price of procuring fuel has become so much because the current presidential administration has been so adverse to having American energy independence. And so it really is going to take D.C. to kind of address and to help promote energy production. But in New Hampshire, I mean, you know, we've passed House Bill 549, which puts limits on put limits in place to prevent hefty cost increases for ratepayer-funded energy efficiency programs, and it's going to minimize further government-mandated increases in the cost of electricity. Republicans have also rejected bills to eliminate the RGGI rebates and to continue promoting good investments in ratepayers. The New Hampshire House also declined to pursue different mandates, whether it was mandating, full clean energy in communities or on homes, that would increase the cost of electricity for everyone and create it so then ratepayers would have to adopt different kind of energy policies in their own household that they couldn't afford on their household budgets. In addition to all those items, we passed House Bill 543, which would help expand safe and clean next-generation nuclear energy in the state of New Hampshire. So we have a proven track record in New Hampshire, you know, in the legislature, of addressing the increase of energy prices and constantly combating to lower energy prices. I mean, we also had previously lowered the electrical consumption tax rate in previous House sessions, and I think in this upcoming House session, and at least something that I'll definitely vote for when reelected, is decreasing the electrical consumption tax, which is a direct cost to all ratepayers. I think even on top of that, Governor Christensen has been very smart to finally expand energy and electrical grants to households that are at need to address cooling costs for people who need to be able to have air conditioning and a number of other electrical needs in their households, something that a lot of southern states have utilized because it's federal money. And I'm happy to see that the state of New Hampshire is going to use that. So New Hampshire Republicans are doing all they can to address things like inflation and electrical prices. We're just absolutely being failed by our current Democratic delegation and by the Biden administration. I also want to touch, Eric, back on what we were talking about regarding school safety. And as someone who serves on a school board, I mean, school safety is a top priority. If your children in schools aren't safe, that's a tragedy. And we've done all we can in this state and on a local level, too, to ensure that children are safe. I mean, every single year we have to submit a plan to the Department of Homeland Security to explain how we'll handle a lockdown, how we'll make sure that there's only one point of entry, how secure our schools are. That needs to be approved by the federal government. Right. Mm-hmm. We've utilized the $30 million that Senator Bradley previously mentioned from a grant funding source that the state provides. We've utilized those dollars to improve the security of our schools, specifically the door locks on all of our schools and elementary schools in the school district, and also to improve the main entry points of every school. We have a resource officer who is armed and on duty, who works with the Department of Police in Wolfboro to deal with issues in schools, not only things that have to do with searching if, you know, there's issues of, like, you know, drug dealing on school property, but also dealing with the fact that they are the one who is there, that if there's someone trying to enter in the main point of entry who shouldn't be going into the school, that they stop that person at the main point of entry after being notified by the front office of the school. And their office is right next to the front office, so they're right there too, and they're always on duty. So we've done a lot, and plus Senator Bradley mentions too that the state legislature's increased $10 million into that funding program for school security, because the $30 million was already utilized by local school districts. So whether it's on a local level or a state level, myself, Senator Bradley, and Governor Sununu have really empowered school districts, or done it on the ground in a school district, in my case, to ensure that there's school security. And when it comes to energy independence, too, we've done it on a local level, investing and making sure that we have our own energy production at our school district. We've used federal dollars to be able to have solar panels, right, and to utilize net metering. Senator Bradley and I both were sponsors of a bill to make it so the municipalities can net meter, too. And so that's going to make it so then the investment that we've made is going to pay for itself, and it's going to make it so then our school district is costing less in energy costs, and ultimately taxpayers will pay less for energy in the long run. And when we make these smart investments and we prevent rate increases onto ratepayers, it's going to decrease costs for everyone. And that's the ultimate goal of what we're doing in New Hampshire as Republicans, protecting the New Hampshire Advantage, working with Governor Sununu, and decreasing costs for everyone, decreasing costs for small businesses, decreasing costs for municipalities, and making smart investments so then in the future, costs are still down too.
Okay. Question, Senator, could the PUC have decided to phase in such an increase as opposed to just one big whack?
The way that it works is utilities go out on a semi-annual basis every 6 months to procure power for those customers that don't make a choice of their power supplier. It's a pass-through cost. So if they did that and the utilities aren't making any profit on the power, okay, it's a pass-through. So if the PUC were to say, okay, instead of a 50% increase, you only get a 25% increase, the utilities, they're not going to eat it. So you could have a deferred payment, but you're going to have to pay that back with interest to the utility down the road. And that doesn't make any sense at all. Now, I do think that what's likely to happen, and I think Speaker Packard's going to take the lead on this, is that there'll be a state initiative using some of our surplus dollars and some of the federal dollars that have yet to be allocated to enhance the so-called LIHEAP program, which is the acronym stands for the Energy Low Income Energy Assistance Program. It's that is federally funded. We get about $40 million annually. I would like to think that we, you know, using the surplus that we have, which is significant, and some of the federal dollars can, you know, make a pretty significant commitment to helping people with home heating costs come the fall. The details are going to have to be worked out. There's a lot of, you know, there'll be a lot of work to do, but I suspect that there'll be, you know, across the board support for it, and it's something that, you know, we would hopefully do in the fall to be ready so that people can apply, you know, in the fall before the onset of winter and have help with their fuel costs this winter.
Are there funds available for cooling costs this summer?
Yes. Source of funds, I can't remember exactly what sorts of funds they use, but there are funds available.
And if I remember properly, you apply for those through your community action program?
Yes, that's correct. It's a adjunct to the LIHEAP program. We normally only do it for heating in New Hampshire because that's the vast majority of, you know, people's heating and cooling consumption needs. But given the rapid run-up in energy costs and the fact that people's budgets are stressed so much because of gasoline prices, food prices, you know, and everything going up and up and up, I think the governor made a smart choice to, you know, allocate some of this money into the summer for cooling.
Okay, Brody?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, Senator, if my memory serves me correctly, reading the union leader yesterday, I believe the summer program works nearly identical to the winter program. So it's federal dollars also, and it's allocated very similarly.
Okay.
It's just not as much money, but it's still, you know, it's a significant amount, and it's a great step in the first direction of addressing the Biden energy crisis. And you know, like I said, Eric, New Hampshire Republicans are, we're doing all we can on our end to decrease costs or to fight back against inflation and increasing costs, whether it's at the fuel pump or in the grocery store. We need new federal leadership, or at least an absolute change in worldview, which I don't think is going to happen with this current administration, to really get this economy back on track. But I mean, New Hampshire right now, we just announced record low unemployment of about 2%, one of the lowest in all of America. Our economy is still going as well as it can, despite the inflationary issues. So we're trying as hard as we can to protect the New Hampshire advantage and keep everyone flourishing. But for as long as the Biden administration keeps sticking its head in the sand like an ostrich, it's going to be, you know, it's just going to make our job that much more difficult. But we're up for the challenge.
Back when I was in college, about when dinosaurs roamed the earth, I was always taught in economics class that inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods, and that ideal unemployment was somewhere between 4 and 5% as far as a rate. Senator, is 2% too low? Or, I mean, we see a lot of staff shortages and things like that just about everywhere.
Look, as somebody whose top priority is economic opportunity and job growth, I'm happy when the unemployment rate is, you know, where it is, 2.1%. I mean, that essentially is full employment. Now, we do have significant issues in, you know, the challenges that we have in for businesses, for not-for-profits, and even government, finding suitable employees. It's been a problem exacerbated by the pandemic of people that have been paid not to work or choose not to work, and that's led to, you know, many of the issues that we have, you know, right now. We also have to deal with housing, because I think New Hampshire is a very attractive state to come and live in, but if you can't find affordable housing, that's an issue. So the governor's going to sign, you know, one of my bills that Brody was very helpful, you know, getting across the finish line, that, you know, will expedite the regulatory review process. We've also put a lot of, you know, financing into the Affordable Housing Fund. The governor just announced another initiative maybe a month ago that was approved. So like energy, it takes a long time to build a house, and you've got, you know, supply issues there too, and labor shortages. But, you know, that's an issue that we absolutely have to address if we are going to, you know, try to resolve some of the labor shortage issues.
Brody?
I think a 2% unemployment rate is great. I think it's great to have full employment. I think it's awesome that people are working and that they're involved in the economy and that they're producing for their families, and that the New Hampshire Advantage is, you know, alive and well as it can be, considering the inflationary issues caused by the Biden administration. I think housing would help a lot of businesses in our community here in Wolfboro and in Tufton Borough too, address a lot of the labor needs that they have, because there are a lot of positions open. I think we've done a lot to really push and to really discuss, and I think it's been a priority of the governor's with his $100 million fund that he's established to help promote grants for affordable housing. I think Senator Bradley's Housing Champions grants that he proposed was a great idea to promote local control, but also allow communities to unlock resources to offset infrastructure costs for being able to create more housing and more opportunity in this state. And at the end of the day, Eric, that's what we want to do, right? Senator Bradley and Governor Sununu say it all the time, is that we're trying to unlock opportunity. You know, government's there to create opportunities, and when we create those opportunities and people take advantage of them, we really see the New Hampshire Advantage and our live free or die values flourish in a number of ways. And so, you know, I'm going to keep working with the senator and with the governor to ensure that our live free or die values and the New Hampshire Advantage continue to flourish. You know, with the state of New Hampshire helping to guide it the best it can, or keep its hands off and let people in New Hampshire and Granite Staters do what they need to do to succeed. And time and time again, Granite Staters have proven to have to have this grit and ingenuity and independence, but also an ability to build community, to really, you know, get together and succeed. So okay, that's what we're going to keep doing.
One of the things we were talking about, the price of fuel, is some states have tried a state tax holiday. I believe the tax in New Hampshire is, what, 18 cents a change? 18 cents and a fraction.
Yep.
I'm not sure 18 cents is going to solve the problem.
I don't
at $5.07 a gallon, you know, at the Citgo station by Center Street.
I don't think so either, Eric. But I also think that there's multiple steps that we can take to fight inflation. You know, I'll say I kind of have three steps that we've done and conquered. You know, this past previous year, addressing, you know, always trying to lower costs, but what we can continue doing to address inflation and the cost of goods and of doing business and of everything, right? Because at the end of the day, New Hampshire needs to keep being the most livable state in the country, and that means protecting the New Hampshire Advantage, preventing a sales and an income tax, and promoting safe streets and safe everything. And I think the first thing is, you know, we need to continue smartly decreasing small business taxes. Every single year, the state of New Hampshire has decreased the small business tax rates. It has stimulated our economy. We have seen a decrease in bankruptcy rates, and we have seen an increase in revenue, right? And that revenue is the biggest thing that we can have to make investments directly into communities, right? And that surplus revenue, you know, step two has always been use those revenues to decrease the statewide property tax, give a larger share of the meals and rooms tax revenues to municipalities, and provide more surplus state revenue to municipalities for local infrastructure investments, creating indirect property tax relief too. This is going to help communities fund the infrastructure projects and fund the needs that they need to provide to Granite Staters to keep our economy going, to keep businesses going and everything. I also think it's worth considering, and I know the senator had it previously explored, and you can discuss that, you know, in a second, but I think it's worth considering using some of our surplus to offset the gas tax rate. They call it specifically the gas toll. Right, because it's a toll to use all the roads and everything, mm-hmm. To decrease the gas toll in the state of New Hampshire to help decrease gas costs. Because if the Biden administration is going to sit on its hands, and if I know my counterparts, whether they're in the primary against me or on the Democratic side, they have no plan for fighting inflation. Well, New Hampshire Republicans, incumbents, we've had a plan, and I think looking at the gas tax and seeing how we can use revenue surplus to offset that gas tax and at least increase some consumer confidence and decrease some of the shipping costs and some of the costs of driving your car and getting to and from work, I think it's a worthy thing to consider. Even if it's a small amount, if we can just, you know, make that small dent and do what we can do in New Hampshire and create that opportunity, I think it's worth considering. But, I mean, those are the three steps that I'm looking at when I get back to Concord of how we're going to fight inflation and fuel costs.
Senator, your thoughts on what Brody said?
Yeah, well, look, the governor signed House Bill 1221 this morning. I was there. It lowered the business profits tax to 7.5%, which was our goal all along, to make New Hampshire more competitive. And we've generated record surpluses, as Brody said, because we're attracting business. The second part of that bill was kind of an interesting journey. In April, I proposed to cut the gas tax for 2 months. It would have cost about $28 million, and it would have lowered the cost of gasoline by 18 cents a gallon. The Democrats all came out against it, and some Republicans came out against it, even though the governor was, Governor Sununu was really begging for it. And so I proposed it, and it got panned. And so, you know, I know when you're not going to get something passed. And so what I then did is the second part of that bill, instead of a gas tax holiday, I proposed that we pay 1 year of city and town's retirement costs. And remember, they were cut by Governor Lynch in 2011 in a budget crisis that we had 10 years ago. So that bill passed. Cities and towns are going to get $28 million for their retirement costs. That's every property taxpayer in, you know, the state of New Hampshire, assuming that it goes into property tax relief as opposed to new spending. So voters should, demand that. But I would have been very happy to do a gas tax holiday, because that's the pain that people are experiencing right now. But there just wasn't the political willpower to get it done. So I chose what I thought was the next best option, lowering property taxes. And I have to say, Eric, you know, between the efforts of the House and the Senate, and I really appreciate Brody's, you know, support in this, as well as John McDonald, who, you know, has really done a great job of advocating with Brody for Wolfboro and Wolfboro's needs. We, throughout this two-year process, have returned over $500 million in funds to cities and towns for, it should be for property tax relief or for infrastructure projects that would avoid property tax hikes. So $125 million of new school funding. So that helps Brody in his job, you know, as a member of the Governor Wentworth Regional School Board. $100 million reduction in the statewide property tax. For a town like Wolfboro that is never gets adequacy grants, that's very helpful to property taxpayers in Wolfboro. Senator Ricciardi's bill that deals with the revenue sharing formula of the rooms and meals tax, an additional $60 million. My bill, Senate Bill 401, which I hope the governor will sign either in Wolfboro or Conway, $65 million for road and bridge construction, municipal roads and bridge. So, you know, again, property tax relief. And then the list goes on. But those were some of the, you know, some of the big ones that were in the funding package that we've developed over the last 2 years. How do we get to be able to have that kind of revenue surplus? Well, it was because we've made New Hampshire as attractive as we can for businesses. And if you look at, you know, our unemployment rate, our lowest in the nation poverty rate, our, I think we are the sixth highest state in the nation for per capita income, we're on the right track. As the state can be, obviously we've got huge federal problems with inflation and energy costs. But, you know, we've done the right thing in New Hampshire. And guess what? The economy has responded, and we've generated a $400 million surplus in this fiscal year alone. And, you know, that's what's going to enable us to help people with their home heating bills, you know, this winter. So, for all my friends on the other side of the aisle that said, oh, why would you ever think of lowering business taxes? It'll cost us revenue. No, it didn't. And it hasn't for years. Ever since we've lowered business taxes, we've produced much more revenue than we anticipated. And we're using that revenue for property tax relief and money going back to cities and towns. So I think, you know, it is a real success story. And when people talk, it's interesting, you know, about high property taxes in New Hampshire. Our property taxes are sort of in line with a lot of other New England states, but we don't have an income tax and we don't have a sales tax. So I was just looking through the figures on, you know, sort of the tax burden on working people and individuals and families, and they rank that, you know, on a state-by-state basis. So we are the 16th best in the country. We're not the lowest. That's Alaska and Wyoming that have huge revenue from mineral resources. But we do pretty well, and we don't overtax people, and we don't have an income and sales tax. And I was struck by the fact that the next best New England state was Rhode Island. And instead of being near the top where we are, they're near the bottom. They're the 36th best, or, you know, 14th worst, however you look at it. And then all the other New England states are even worse than Rhode Island. So we're doing things right in New Hampshire, and all these rankings show that. I mean, the 2021 U.S. News and World Report survey came out recently. We're the fourth best state to live in the country because of economic opportunity, because of the quality of our school and healthcare systems, because we have the safest state in the nation, and we have a really good environment in New Hampshire. Those are some of the key metrics. And you know, I think it's because we've had rational leadership that we protect taxpayers, we spend our money wisely, but we do, you know, invest resources where they need to be invested in mental health. We've upgraded the system to prevent child abuse and neglect, or for families with a disabled child. We have done those things, and by managing our affairs correctly, we've generated surpluses. By making our economy more competitive, we have people wanting to come here. Yes, it means we have a housing issue that we're going to solve. It takes some time, but we will, you know, we will solve it. And you just contrast the, you know, right track in New Hampshire versus the wrong track in Washington. And I think that, you know, that's what the 2022 election, Eric, is going to be all about.
I couldn't agree more with Senator Bradley, Eric. And I think what a lot of people forget, too, is that business tax rates do not equal business tax revenue, right? Your rate, obviously, if you increase your rate, you're going to increase your revenue. But if you decrease your rate, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to decrease your revenue. Because what matters is how much.
Brody, if you increase your rate, you know, you're going to get less revenue because you're just not attracting growth and
that
new
too.
Opportunities.
Yeah, if anyone, listening back home knows the Laffer curve. At a certain point, you have diminishing returns. But New Hampshire again has proven that when we're decreasing our rate, we're increasing our revenues. And so, if we keep a very strong business climate in the state, Eric, we're going to have very strong revenues, and those revenues, without these small businesses, without the economic opportunity that New Hampshire Republicans are providing, you know, without the business tax rate decreases that Senator Bradley, myself, and Representative John McDonald have voted for, we wouldn't have this kind of revenue to create the opportunity to decrease property taxes, whether it's directly by decreasing the statewide property tax or indirectly with the number of funding programs that and grant opportunities for communities that Senator Bradley has mentioned. None of it would be possible if we never decreased these business taxes, especially during COVID, where Democrats were completely averse to decreasing the tax rates. We would have saw high bankruptcy. New Hampshire had the lowest bankruptcy rate in 2020 of any state in the country. We would have seen an increase in bankruptcies, less businesses to be able to provide revenue to the state, and we would have seen higher business tax rates if the Democrats had their way, and we would have saw less revenue. And all the opportunity we're providing now is thanks to reductions to the business profits tax, business enterprise tax, meals and rooms tax. I mean, you name it, those taxes are having record revenues, and we're making record investments.
Right. What about interest in dividends? Is that still a tax, Senator?
We have an interest in dividends tax, but it is being phased out over time. And I think, like business taxes that we have lowered over time, phasing out the interest in dividends tax will, I think, help us keep, you know, people in New Hampshire, senior citizens in particular, and that will be good for our economy.
I mean, I always wondered about that because it seems like an income tax. Interest is income.
Well, Eric, it definitely is an income tax. I'm happy New Hampshire Republicans, you know, in our last budget, you know, made it so we're phasing that out, and I would not be opposed to, you know, expediting the phasing out of that tax with the kind of revenues that we have too. Obviously, when you have revenue surplus and you need to decide where you're going to allocate that revenue surplus, you know, after putting it into, you know, a record rainy day fund that we've established and everything that we've grown, we have to set priorities. But definitely, you know, keeping the phase out of the interest and dividends tax is a top priority. Wolfboro has a lot of retirees, a lot of people who have made long-term investments in their future so they could retire. And I don't think that they should be punished for making those smart investments and collecting the interest so then they can continue to live comfortably in their retirement, especially in the middle of inflation. I think it'd be a terrible mistake for the state of New Hampshire to ever adopt an income or a sales tax, I'm completely opposed to both. I'll continue to completely be opposed to both. I know Representative McDonald feels the same way too. New Hampshire is a unique and amazing state because we don't have an income or a sales tax. Income and sales tax adversely hurts younger people. It adversely hurts people of lower economic standing in a community. And I can speak as someone who's a younger person. If I had to pay an income tax, I mean, the federal income tax is already kills me, right? And I couldn't imagine also paying a state income tax on top of that. It disproportionately eats at my wealth and my ability to create wealth and to eventually save up to have my own home, you know, be able to afford housing, to be able to, you know, afford to have a family. It's going to eat at my wealth a lot sooner than it's going to eat at the wealth of someone who's, you know, making six figures.
Right. Is it time? I know that, you know, the surplus can only go so far, but is it time to maybe look at a state incentive for electric vehicle purchasing, Senator? Like the federal tax credit?
I think the federal tax credit should be sufficient at this point in time. Electric vehicles are, you know, they are the wave of the future, but they're not here yet. And I think, you know, the federal tax credit is probably helpful for some people being able to buy, you know, an electric vehicle, but their long supply issues in getting electric vehicles. Well, of course, that's true for any vehicle now. I have a plug-in hybrid myself. Just have had it only for a few months. I love it. I get 25 miles, you know, for every plug-in, and I think it's great.
Now, a plug-in hybrid, is that different from a regular hybrid?
Yeah, I plug it in, and I used to have a hybrid car also that generated electricity from the braking system. And I thought it was okay. It probably improved my gas mileage by 10%. I think the plug-in hybrid, I plug it in. So I'm utilizing electricity to fuel the battery that gives me the 25 miles. So that's the difference. I'm using electricity as opposed to my former hybrid that I had in the past, which uses the braking system to create the electric component.
Okay. 12:49 here on WASR. Brody, what do you think? Is it time for a New Hampshire incentive on electric vehicles?
I agree with the senator. The federal government has provided enough of an incentive. We're seeing, you know, the used electric car vehicle market is finally becoming pretty wide open for regular consumers, even like myself, who might be thinking about getting a car in the future. You know, I don't think the state needs to be making investment in that. I think the state could possibly look at considering maybe some kind of grant funding for, you know, maybe municipalities acquiring these vehicles, because it saves a lot on fuel costs, as we've seen with inflation and everything. But, you know, that's not a top priority. It's something to consider. You know, I'm pretty open-minded person. I'm always willing to consider it. But, I mean, I can speak what we've done in the town of Wolfboro. You know, my father's on the board of selectmen, Brian DeShays, and mm-hmm. So he's been a pretty strong advocate for creating the new charging stations that we have in town, which weren't taxpayer-funded. He went to local businesses and asked them to make donations. And, you know, so we have a charger in town now, and people can utilize that charger. And I think something that a lot of people forget, too, with our electric vehicles is that electric vehicles, they charge mostly at night, right? And the energy that's used at night, especially in the Northeast, is not always fossil fuel energy. It tends to be more non-carbon forms of energy, like, for example, nuclear. So I think that's a big thing that folks kind of, you know, will forget from time to time, because they sometimes mock electric cars, and it's always a funny joke to make where it says, well, yeah, you know, but you're just plugging it into a fossil fuel, you know, energy grid. And that's true. And fossil fuels are a huge part of our energy grid in addressing, you know, the troughs and the peaks of energy demand. And, you know, fossil fuels will be nearly impossible to divest from until there's proper energy storage And improve battery systems to be able to store energy that's created by renewable energy. So fossil fuels can never go the way of the dodo, like some people think. They're an integral part of our energy grid and of addressing people's energy needs. And as we've seen with inflation, you know, without it, you know, energy prices obviously go up, and consumers and, you know, businesses get very upset about that, and understandably so, you know, with a Biden administration that's not addressing the needs. But I think electric cars are becoming more normal. I think they're becoming more affordable to Americans. And I think, you know, people will be able to look at, you know, the price of buying a new electric car and the price of buying a new gas car, recognize that electric vehicles, they don't have the same upkeep costs because the engine is a lot simpler. They don't have to have an oil change regularly. And ultimately, too, the cost of, you know, fueling it, because electricity costs a lot less than gas at the pump, is a lot less. And I think also sometimes people also forget, too, is that the cost of producing electricity, the amount of carbon needed to create the electricity to charge a car is still also significantly less than the amount of carbon given off by gas vehicles, too. So there's a number of advantages, but I think consumers are the best kind of people that are going to make a decision for themselves and their family. And I don't think we need the government or the state of New Hampshire to have people take advantage of, you know, what could be a good opportunity. I think they're going to be able to look at it, you know, as Republicans fix the economy once the Biden administration gets out of the way, and be able to say, oh, this might be a good investment for myself and my family, or even a good investment for a community, to be able to decrease energy prices, decrease fuel prices for a family, and decrease the cost of traveling and create some opportunity for folks.
Right. It's 12:53 here on WASR. We're talking with Senator Chip Bradley and Representative Brody DeShays, both of Wolfboro. In our remaining time, I wanted to talk a little bit about student loans. I realize the state of New Hampshire really isn't in the student loan business, but it affects everybody who's got a student loan. The president's proposal for a $10,000 forgiveness, which would cost billions of dollars. Senator, your thoughts?
I mean, look, I think that problem with student loans is that the cost of education offered by universities is way too high. And therein lies your problem. I mean, the community college system in New Hampshire is a great deal. And you can get a great education for an awful lot less money than, you know, going to a full-fledged university. And you come out with technical skills. And so the universities over the years have been touting how important a college education is. And the reality has been, yeah, it's saddled people with a lot of student debt, and it's enabled them to, you know, not live in the real world of costs and just keep increasing their costs to the point now that, you know, it is a national problem of student loan debt. But, you know, I think it's a little bit unfair for people that have paid off their student loans or never had student loans in the beginning to then subsidize those that, you know, are getting their loans paid off, that according to the statistics I've read, this $10,000 reducing of student loans would largely benefit people in the upper income brackets anyway. And I'm not sure that, you know, that makes an awful lot of sense.
Now, I assume, Brody, that you have student loans.
Yeah, I do have student loans, and okay. I'm vehemently against the Biden administration's proposal. I think I took on student loans as a personal choice and an economic choice. And yes, they were, you know, I did take on federal loans, and those were, you know, an opportunity. And, you know, I don't have a problem with the federal government expanding Pell Grants for low-income folks. But when we're talking about, you know, someone like myself who's able to support themselves and, you know, you know, obviously, you know, I live with my fiance, and, you know, we're able to pay our rent, and she's going to graduate school and everything. And so she works part time. And so I'm able to help defray some of those costs and everything. But I've made an economic choice. I need to burden that economic choice. It's my burden to carry. It is not the burden of peers my age who decided not to go to college, who are working full time, who are even acquiring their own homes. I mean, I just don't think it's fair. I made an economic choice. you know, the federal government needs me to pay back those loans so then the program works properly, so then they can actually give out more loans to future students and defray their costs. It is not fair to the taxpayers in this country. It's not fair to my peers who probably would have gone to school knowing that they would have had that kind of forgiveness. And it's not fair. It's not how the program is supposed to work. I think it's a I think it's a disingenuous way to try to get votes from younger folks who are not happy with the Biden administration either. When you look at even Democrats who are under the age of 30, their approval of President Biden is abysmal. It's abysmal. And I can say, as someone whose fiance is a Democrat, she is absolutely vehemently right now not impressed with how the course of America is going. And that's the biggest thing that's the difference between 603 and D.C. New Hampshire Republicans are providing opportunity. You know, we're expanding our tent of voters. There are a lot of folks that are going to be joining. They're going to be joining our voting coalition and helping us build a good majority here. And it's gimmicks like that kind of really disappoint me when we have something like inflation facing all of us right now, right in the face. And, you know, the Biden administration should be more concerned about dealing with crime, the porous border and the cost created by that, and the drugs pouring over, and, you know, inflation and energy prices. And they're not. They're just, you know, it's a shame, quite frankly.
Senator, let me give you the last word. I guess the question is, how did we get here? I understand, you know, a lot of the things that we talked about at the top of the show with, you know, drilling and Russian sanctions and things like that. But sometimes, you know, I look at it and I throw up my hands and I just say, you know, I'm not sure anyone's capable of fixing this. But your thoughts on getting us back to an even keel?
Well, look, the last time this happened was, you know, in the late 1970s. America elected Ronald Reagan, and it took a while, but the economy recovered. And we had, you know, a number of years of a pretty strong economy. Obviously, the housing bubble in 2008, you know, was another problem, and we survived that. We will survive this. It's not going to be pretty. Interest rates are going to go up in all likelihood. Whether it's the Biden administration or a successor administration is going to come to its senses on energy, and we will, in America, produce more energy, and we'll get back to, you know, rational pricing levels, all while we develop more, you know, cleaner energy and renewable energy options. That will happen also. But you just can't have this willful ignorance of the choices and the policy initiatives that you're adopting in Washington and think that it's all okay today. And perhaps the most disingenuous thing is to hear the president say everything is good and we're better off than other countries in the world. I mean, that is just masking over the difficulty that every hardworking family in America is having these days.
All right. It is 1 o'clock. I want to thank you both for taking the time to be here today, Senator Jeb Bradley and Representative Brody DeShays. Thank you both for your insights and for your time.
Always a pleasure, Eric.
Thank you for having me, Eric. Appreciate
thank you, Senator.
It.
And you too, Brody. Take care. It is 1 o'clock. News is next on WASR.